Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC, and in order to get an inside look at the modern college experience, my next guest had the perhaps unenviable task of living for a year in a college co-ed dorm. Unenviable? Elizabeth Armstrong and Laura Hamilton tracked the young women throughout their four-year college career and beyond, and found that for many of these women, the road through college was what they called a party pathway, which prioritized socializing over academics. I'm shocked to hear any such allegation. But importantly, it's one that the university not only condoned, but encouraged and exacerbates inequality, according to my guests. Does it sound familiar, recent students? Their research is published in a new book, Paying for the Party, How College Maintains Inequality. Elizabeth Armstrong is Associate Professor of Sociology and Organization Studies at the University of Michigan. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, good to be here today.
And Laura Hamilton is Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of California in Merced. Welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hello, Brian.
And Professor Hamilton, I'll start with you. One of the young students you tracked, Hannah, seems to be an archetype of the kind of, let's say, affluent but mediocre student, or affluent but average, who follows this party pathway. So tell us about Hannah and why she's a model for this issue in your book.
Well, Hannah's like many other affluent out-of-state students who attends a school like Midwest University, which is the university that we studied.
Let me stop for a second. Is this because really you didn't name the university that you studied? So, and you call it MU, and I see one of you came from works at Michigan, but it was a big Midwest state university that you decided not to name. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, and we decided not to name it because it is just like we could have done this study at any other large four-year mid-tier public university across the country. It didn't matter in that sense, so it made little sense to actually name the university when it's not a story about what happened at that university. It's a story of what happens at universities like Midwest U.
Major flagship research institutions, state universities all over the country.
Right, and not the top, so not the very tippy top of the public system.
Uh-huh.
So we're not talking, you know, the top 25 public schools in the country, but outside of that. So mid-tier, they have good academic reputations, but they also tend to have very large, what we call party pathways, which are these institutional supports, both academic and social, for parties.
Okay, so we've got that context of where you did your research.
Yeah.
So Hannah, as a representative of the party pathway.
So Hannah is, you know, an out-of-state student who comes from a very affluent family who was interested in MU because of the quintessential college life that it offered. Big-time sports, a large Greek system, a promise of lots of fun. And so she came from out-of-state seeking that. And many students like her are looking for that. She couldn't have qualified. A lot of her relatives went to more prestigious schools. She couldn't have qualified based on her academic credentials for a private school or one of the top 25 public schools. So she was really seeking a social experience, and that's what Midwest U offered for her. I'm sure, Elizabeth, you might want to add more about Hannah in particular.
Well, let me go on, because our time is limited, to ask you, Professor Armstrong, where inequality comes in. Because one of the striking things in your book, in this story, is that the working class students, with few exceptions, all transferred out of this university that you studied. So why did they leave, and why is inequality in the subtitle of your book?
So inequality comes in pretty much every aspect of the experience. So, for example, on the dorm floor, these young women, a lot of them, like Hannah and the other young women, were really interested in getting in sororities. And it was a very competitive process. So they tended to be really nice to people who they thought could help them get in. And if they thought that someone was pretty much useless in that process, they snubbed them. So the poor girls ended up being kind of at the receiving end of just a complete sort of, you know, mean girl behavior. They just were ignored. And so that tended to leave them to think about leaving. But then they also and the Greek system was pretty much entirely class segregated in the sense that rich kids did that, the poor kids didn't. But then sometimes also what happened is that they would get lured towards majors that were kind of, well, low value, things, all kinds of majors in kind of communications or kind of tourism. That was a favorite one that, that the women end up doing. And they would kind of see the rich girls taking these majors, and they didn't really understand that these were young women who were probably not necessarily going to have to rely on a resume to get a job out of college, that either they didn't really need the job or their parents would get it for them.
So you mean through kind of social contagion, more working class kids wound up majoring in things that weren't going to help them really break into the
absolutely.
Middle class?
Yeah. One young woman came in wanting to major in education, and she learned that it was possible to do sports broadcasting. And so she thought, I like sports. I like athletes. I should do that, too. And then she ended up, after 4 years, realizing that there was no way she could break into this field and transferring back to education. But by that time, she'd partied so hard that her grades had slipped and she couldn't get into the School of Education at MU, and ended up transferring back to the regional school and taking 6 years
and
to graduate.
Schools of Education aren't generally like, let's say, med school to get into, so she must have slipped a bit. But we just have a few minutes in this segment. And listeners, I wish we had a lot more time and we could take a lot of calls on whether this reflects an experience. I know one of my producers who went to a major state university somewhere in the Northeast that will remain unnamed at the moment was nodding her head through this and saying, boy, was that like my college experience just a few years ago. So anybody else having this glimmer of uncomfortable recognition? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll just have time for one or two. And Professor Hamilton, you do have some suggestions for how to get these state schools back on track.
Yeah, we do. One of the largest ones is to sort of dismantle the party pathway a bit, which involves removing some of the powers that the Greek system has on campus. One of the things we found is that the Greek system structured the entirety of social life, and it even sometimes bled into academic life. For instance, there was a large math test that was scheduled during rush, and rather than reschedule the rush, which is women's sort of recruitment process, they rescheduled the test. Right. So we realized that one of the biggest steps would be to sort of dismantle the party pathway or to the Greek system, or to even out resources a bit. So it may not be feasible for administrators to, remove support entirely from the Greek system, because donations come from the Greek system from alumni. It attracts a lot of students. But one way to make things more equal is to provide more resources for other student groups that might provide an alternative social space or alternative social options for students. And we also found that it was really important to devote more resources to first-generation students seeking mobility. A lot of times they don't have parents who are college educated or really equipped to help them navigate the college environment, and academic advising doesn't make up that gap. These students often arrive at college without all of the advice that other people are getting from brothers, sisters, parents, friends, and it makes it very difficult for them to navigate college, to figure out, for instance, that maybe sports broadcasting isn't a good option for them. They don't have someone there telling them that. Sort of building up more advising for students like that, to advise them in a way that an upper middle class college educated parent might be able to offer, offering that same sort of advice.
Let me get one story in here from Erica. Erica, we've got about 30 seconds for you, so right to the point as much as you can.
Well, I don't think that the problem you're describing is confined only to public schools. I used to teach at a private liberal arts college ranked in the third tier of U.S. News and World Report, and it was very much making the entire college experience for rich, underachieving students, mm-hmm. and making sure that students knew they'd have access to alcohol.
Did they also have more working class students, though, at the school?
There wasn't as much an aim at that. There were a few, but it was much more focused on the whole school being for mm-hmm. spoiled rich kids.
Thank you very much. You do suggest, Professor Armstrong, that there should be more focus on faculty instruction. Does that mean instead of TAs doing the teaching while the faculty do their research?
Well, certainly time in the classroom matters. A book that came out last year, Academically Adrift, by Richard Aram and Josip Araksa, showed that time on task matters for what students learn. If students are reading a lot, if they're writing a lot, if the faculty is engaged, if the faculty mm-hmm. has high expectations and is in it with the students, that matters and the outcomes.
So do either of you have any sympathy for these proposals, like from the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, for state universities to actually charge higher tuition to kids who are not going into sciences or business or something that's actually likely to get them a job?
Oh, I mean, Laura, do you have an opinion on that?
I'm a little leery of, I'm in California, and we've seen some policies that aren't specifically like that one, but charge students higher tuition for certain privileges, whether that be major choice or being allowed to register before other students. And to me, anytime you add a price dollar on it, it just sort of contributes to class stratification.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let that be
the last word. Certain students have access. The book is Paying for the Party, How College Maintains Inequality, by Elizabeth Armstrong from the University of Michigan and Laura Hamilton from UC Merced. Thank you both very much. Very thought-provoking.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.